He popped open the door to his twin's room and found it empty. It was later than Erdrick usually stayed out, but the festivities would last until dawn. "Well, brother mine, did you seduce some lass? Got to be careful with that. Wouldn't want the queen jealous." He stopped talking when another thought crossed his mind. "No, you wouldn't, would you? Not with the queen." Maybe, he thought, that was the source of his restlessness tonight. He glanced down at himself to make sure his clothes were something Erdrick would wear and pulled the yellow scarf off his knee. Then, slouching a little, Beckram paced down the hall. There were a lot of people still in the court hall, so it took Beckram a long time to see that Erdrick wasn't there. When he saw the queen gossiping with one of her ladies, he relaxed. Not that he'd believed his brother could betray him. Not really. Erdrick? He was better at being Erdrick than Erdrick was at being him. Beckram didn't even hesitate in responding to his brother's name. "Lord Alison." The older man looked tired. "You usually don't come to the dances, Erdrick." Beckram gave his brother's soft, half-embarrassed laugh. "Well, I'm looking for Beckram. He borrowed one of my books to press a crease out of a scarf, and now I can't find it anywhere." "Oh," the king's brother shrugged. "I haven't seen him here lately. After dinner, he said something about catching some air." "I'll check the courtyard then," said Beckram. Alison nodded. "If I see him, I'll tell him you're looking for him." When the Shavik boy wandered away, Alison sipped his water to wash the foul taste of his brother's business out of his mouth. At first, Beckram thought the courtyard was empty. It was a little chilly, not yet fall, but soon. The unease which had brought him home earlier than his comrades hadn't dissipated with the reassurance that Erdrick hadn't poached his lady. He stood in the middle of the courtyard and tapped his toe impatiently. "To bed," he decided abruptly. There must have been something odd in the ale he'd had tonight that produced this feeling that something was wrong. The damned palace was too big to search for his brother, who was probably passed out on some forgotten couch somewhere. Beckram started for the entrance nearest his rooms, but stopped when he smelled blood. As the air brought the rich scent of it to his nose, something within him died, as a sudden certainty grew within him. Something had happened to his twin. "Rick?" he called anyway, answered only by a faint breeze that made the leaves whisper together. A dizzy feeling of unreality swept over him as he stepped through the carefully planted bed and followed the scent of death to the shape that lay half hidden in shadows. Shock was replaced first by grief, then by rage. As he stared at his twin's dead face, he remembered the pale face of the queen's last lover after he'd been drowned and cursed himself for asking Erdrick to take his place. He should have known better. The urge to kill Jacobin was overwhelming. He knew he could do it too, despite the king's reputation as a swordsman. Who would be so stupid as to defeat the High King? Beckram's sword work had been polished by Stala. Yes, yes, he could kill Jacobin. There were places the king didn't bring his guards. But if he did, his father would lose both of his sons, one to murder, and the other to the headsman's axe. Beckram held that thought and rode the pain it brought. There could be no overt revenge. He would have to hold to the oaths he swore to the king for his father's sake. Carefully, Beckram closed his twin's eyes. He kissed the cool forehead and muttered a few words of love. Then he slid an arm beneath Erdrick's shoulders and under his knees, gathering him close. It wasn't easy getting to his feet, for Erdrick weighed no less than Beckram, and neither of them were small men. Beckram staggered a bit, adjusting to the weight, then began to walk. Beckram stood momentarily unnoticed in the entranceway and looked around. His gaze drifted over Havanus and found a dozen more nobles who were just the kind of men he was looking for. Men whose loyalty to the throne could not be doubted, nor could their word be bought. Satisfied, Beckram strode in with measured footsteps, the beat of his pulse dictating his steps. He could tell when they saw him, the 100 or so people still dancing at this hour, because a hush fell over the crowd. Everyone in this room knew about the queen's previous lover. Everyone knew Beckram had been her lover. Everyone knew they were watching Erdrick carry Beckram's body before the king who had killed him. The king remained where he was, expressionless. Beckram heard the small sound the queen made, but he had eyes only for Jacobin. When the king was 5 paces away, the traditional space for fealty swearing, Beckram knelt and set his brother on the white marble tiles. He remained kneeling. "My king," he said, using his voice as his father had taught him so it carried to the far corner of the room. "Hurogs have served the Talvinish rule since there have been high kings. My father, his brother, their father before them served you. It is my intention to do the same. Havernus?" Oh, brave man, thought Beckram as he saw the Arnstone nobleman approach out of the corner of his eye. Havernus waited to answer until he stood behind the king. "We are all doing this by tradition," thought Beckram with that same eerie calmness that had claimed him from his entrance into the dance room. "Hurog?" asked Havernus. It startled Beckram to be called that. He had always been addressed as Iftihar after his father's holding, but it was appropriate. Surely his soul was encased in the cold black stone of Hurog. "How many men go with you, Havernus?" Beckram asked, not taking his eyes from the king.
84.
"And you leave when?"
10 days' time.
"Would you consider taking me?"
"Hurogs are rare men. I would be honored."
For the first time since he'd entered the room, Beckram looked away from the king. He stared at his twin's gray face and black blood. No more dusty books, he thought. Beckram returned his gaze to the king's face, wanting to watch his reaction.
"Then you may put down the name of Beckram of Hurog on your list." A gasp of surprise traveled around the room. "First, though, I must take my brother Erdrick to Hurog for burial. He met with an accident in the courtyard, or maybe it was suicide."
Beckram looked at the gaping wound, then looked around the room.
"No, I suppose it was an accident. He tripped and cut his throat on a thorn in the garden."
Beckram scooped his brother off the floor. The body seemed much lighter and strode to the nearest door. It wasn't until he was in the corridor that he realized Havernus and Garanon paced beside him.
"When are you leaving?" asked Garanon.
"Now,"
Beckram replied shortly.
"Do you have enough gold to hire horses along the way?"
"I'll manage." Garanon pulled his belt purse loose and tied it to Beckram's belt.
"That should be enough."
"I'll have 2 of my men ride honor guard," said Havernus. "They'll meet you at the stables. I won't wait. If they're late, they'll catch up."
They left him then, and he walked the rest of the way to his rooms alone. He had to set Erdrick down to open the door, and it was harder to pick him up again this time. The strength of anger was seeping away, leaving only guilt. Beckram lay Erdrick on the bed while he packed. He took Garanon's pouch and put it in his saddlebags, then stared around the suite at a loss. What was appropriate to pack? In the end, he just wrapped Erdrick in the top quilt of the bed and staggered out with near-empty saddlebags. He didn't bother waking the grooms, but settled his burden on a pile of hay and saddled both horses. The Hurog-bred gelding snorted a bit at the dead body, but Hellbor, Erdrick's war-trained mount, stood steady while Beckram heaved the wrapped body over the saddle and secured it with a rope. Mounting his own steed, Beckram started out. He passed a couple of men wearing Havernus's colors running to the stable, but he didn't stop. He would spend no more time than he had to in the home of a man who murdered his brother. He didn't even notice it was Garanon and Havernus who opened the palace gates and let him through.
"Havernus, I need to ride with you," said Garanon hoarsely. "If I stay here longer, I'll slit Jacobin's throat myself, which fool act would do Arnstone no good at all."
Havernus gave him an odd look, then shifted his gaze to watch his 2 men galloping after the Shavig lordling.
"Foolish indeed. Very well, Garanon, ride with us for Arnstone."
"Arnstone lives,"
Garanon made a sign with his fingers, an old sign of the Arnstone rebels. Havernus returned the signal easily and switched to his native tongue. "Arnstone free." Garanon wondered if everyone hadn't been a little too certain of Havernus's loyalty to the king. Beckram's rented horses were staggering by the time Hurog appeared, dark and foreboding in the morning skyline. 2 days and 3 nights of riding, 8 changes of mounts, and most of Garanon's gold had gotten him this far. He hadn't seen Havernus's men since the second night. Just in front of the gate, Beckram drew his horse to a halt. When he'd ruined a friend's horse by jumping it recklessly over a fence too high for hurdling, his father had paid for the animal. This time there was nothing his father could fix. Exhausted, Beckram laughed. Though there was nothing humorous about it, he'd been bringing his brother to Hurog for his father to fix, and he hadn't even realized it. He let the horses plod ahead. The sound of hooves on the pavement in front of Hurog alerted the sentries, but they recognized him and opened the gate. Although it was barely dawn, his father was in the bailey talking to one of the farmers when Beckram rode in.
Erdrick!
Beckram blinked stupidly, wondering how his father had jumped across the bailey so fast. Then it occurred to him that he'd closed his eyes for a bit.
Erdrick, what's wrong? Who's on the horse?
Beckram slid off his horse and continued to fall until he knelt on the cool ground.
I'm Beckram, he said clearly. Erdrick's dead. My fault.
He stared at his father, waiting for the news to hit, waiting to be punished as he deserved.
So the king killed Erdrick, because you were sleeping with the queen, after he'd all but ordered you to do so.
Beckram wondered that his father's voice was so calm. They sat in a small antechamber where no one could hear. Beckram was still tired, but he'd slept, drugged with mulled wine and exhaustion until the dreams had driven him from his bed. For the third time, he said, "The king killed Erdrick, thinking he was me. If I hadn't talked Erdrick into taking my place, he would be alive." Durok closed his eyes. "I saved that young fool's life once, did you know? Saved it so he could kill my son," he sighed. "We'll bury Erdrick tomorrow. Your mother's here. She'll want to bury him at Iftahar." His father heard the need in his voice. "He'll be buried here, unless you wish it differently. Here. Hurog will protect him from murderers and fools." He hadn't meant to say that. It sounded silly aloud. His father merely nodded. Beckram relaxed a bit. "I'll leave the next day for Estien." "You're still set on joining Havernus in his fool's errand." Beckram picked at the table covering. "I need something to do. If I don't, I'll kill him." Durag's mouth tightened. "Don't think I haven't considered it. If it were 15 years ago, I could do it. Young Alazon was popular and the world was used to war. But Jacobin has gotten rid of most of the men who would stand against him, and Alazon's a useless fop outside the battlefield." He sighed. "Very well, go. But I won't send you alone. I'll talk to Stala. She and 50 men will accompany you, fighting under your command."
I can't take them, said Beckram. "Havernus only has leave for 100 men. I believe I'm the 85th.
"You'll take them," said Durok, standing up. "The Blue Guard's motto is, we fight as one. You will only be one."
"The king won't accept that."
Durok smiled coldly.
"I'll talk to him. Leave it to me."
Chapter 10. Wardwick.
Death is a wretched business, and rain only made it worse. Several weeks into my quest, my search for glory seemed fruitless. We looked for Vorsagian raiders as we neared the southern reaches of Arnstone, but only came upon a few more groups of ragged bandits in the burnt-over villages where the Vorsag had been. It rained all the time, except when it hailed or sleeted. Oryg's gelding and one of the pack horses had developed hoof rot despite the oil we used. Everyone's temper was short from being constantly cold and damp. Tostin, as always, was the worst, seldom speaking except in answer to direct questions. The cold damp caused an old wound in Penrod's shoulder to act up, making practice visibly painful, but he didn't allow me to release him. When Axial forced him to stop, he and Penrod almost came to blows. Would have, except for Bastia's intervention. Axial, son of the King of Dwarves, watched me like a sheepdog watching his shepherd, but said little.
Even Orig was subdued. We stopped at a village one mid-afternoon for provisions. It wasn't much, but I sent Penrod to find the headman and talk to him. Orig took the opportunity to wander off, exploring.
They say they haven't seen any raiders, nor heard of any, said Penrod when he returned. They also say that they've no grain for sale, nor any other foodstuff.
We'd heard that often enough. If it hadn't been for Luavellet's provisions and our own woodcraft, we'd have been starving. Arnstonians had a long memory.
Did you tell them that the village east of here was burned to the ground when we passed it? Asked Tostin.
I did, said Penrod. I'm fairly sure they think we're the ones who did it.
Where's Orig?
He went to look at Meron's temple, I said. I think he went to ask her to stop the rain.
It'll just sleet then, said Axiel sourly.
This village was larger than the last we'd been in, but that was all to be said of it. There had been people going about their business when we came. Upon seeing us, they'd sought shelter in the small stone and thatch huts that were set in circles off the path that served as the main road. The temple of Meron the Healer, goddess of growing things, was a little larger than the other buildings, and some time ago someone had painted it. There were still flecks of blue and white on the orange stone. It had no door, just a bit of ragged oilcloth hung from the doorframe.
He went to look at the artifacts. Meron's temples are filled with them, explained Bestia. I don't feel much magic from the temple, though.
We had gone from being mercenary warriors here to save Arnstone from the evil Vorsag to being unwanted tourists. I rolled my eyes at the thought. There isn't very much magic in Meron's temples, I told her. Not really. Most of the nobles worship Vekka, the god of war. Meron's priests might demand magic as tribute, but that usually means homemade charms from some hedge witch. Peasants can't afford real magic.
Silverfells is not far from here, said Axiel. I'd recognize that rock formation.
He pointed towards an outcropping on the hill.
I think we passed just west of here last time we came. If you're looking for interesting magical items, Silverfells has a stone they claim was once a dragon.
Penrod snorted.
The Hurigmeaton said it was as much a dragon as he was a horse when we stopped by there.
Axiel shook his head.
I don't know. It was steeped in magic. I could tell that much.
I hadn't known he could detect magic. Orig ducked under the cloth door of the temple and sloshed his way to his horse.
Where do we go next?
Silverfells, I said. Let's go be tourists, I thought bitterly.
To see the dragon? Asked Orig. Splendid.
Pansy's big hooves splashed water from the puddles high enough to splatter my already soaked boots. It was hard to say if there was a creek running through the path or a path running through the creek. At least Pansy was happy. I rode in the lead where he liked to be rather than with the rest of them. The last time I tried to cheer Tostin up, he made a few nasty comments, and I thought I'd better stay by myself until I was able to control my tongue. The rain didn't bother the stallion, as it did some of the other horses. Pansy ignored it as if he were too arrogant to be troubled by such a little thing as weather. I wondered if I should send everyone else home. Penrod needed to be back in the drier climate of Shavig where his shoulder wouldn't bother him. Ciara was too young for this, and Tostin was too soft, not in body but in spirit. He felt the death of everybody we burned, whether it was a bandit we'd killed or a villager killed by raiders. Even Bestia would be better off elsewhere. She had claimed to be a poor wizard. I was no judge of such things, but although she was certainly not as good as Orig, she was far better than Lysling, father's mage. She lit a fire every night with wet tinder and wetter wood while Orig dried our bedding. She could make a living in any noble's house, especially in a wet climate. She didn't need me. Orig belonged at Hurog, where he and Hurog were safe. It was almost painful to be around him. He was my daily reminder that Hurog was not mine, nor, I'd come to believe, would it ever be. That left only Axiel, my father's man, the dwarven king's son. Of us all, he was most suited to doing something other than wandering aimlessly through this godforsaken swamp. Any noble would hire him as armsmaster. But according to Athervon, Axiel was here to save his people because his father had had a dream. Axiel had been with my father for at least 16 years, maybe longer. But he thought I was the reason he'd been sent to Hurog.
Pansy snorted suddenly and collected himself, a warhorse ready to do battle. The change pulled me abruptly from my absorption. Heart thrumming, I searched the woods for signs of watchers. With a nudge of my knee and shift of my weight, I spun Pansy in a tight circle, but I didn't see anything, except that the rest of my party was some distance back, with Axial in the lead and Aurig hindmost. Tostin and Bastia were engaged in animated discussion. Penrod was rubbing his shoulder under Ciara's concerned gaze. Axial was watching me, his hand on his sword. I held up my hand flat, signaling him to wait. When he nodded, I set Pansy ahead on the narrow track, which wound through the high mountain marshes. Pansy minced forward, twitching his ears this way and that. I was just ready to turn back when the path wove through some willows and into the remains of a village.
Thank the fates I had kept the others from following me, was all I could think. I didn't want Ciara or Tostin to see this. This didn't look like any of the raided villages we'd come to before. The Vorsag had demolished the village houses and piled the wood and thatch along the road. The bodies of the villagers were laid out very carefully on top. Someone had tried to start a pyre to burn the dead, but the rain had gutted it before any of the bodies had been more than scorched. It was the smell of wet char and blood that must have alerted Pansy. I dismounted and led the stallion behind me. Though we'd seen the results of Vorsagian attacks before, I hadn't seen anything like this. At the other villages, there were survivors who'd run at the first sound of trouble. If the Vorsag hadn't killed every living soul in the village, they'd certainly tried. The Vorsag, like Shavigman, buried their dead, but they hadn't been up to this point concerned enough with the possibility of the Arnstonians' unquiet spirits haunting their village to burn the dead. I didn't think that they had suddenly started now. My father said he learned the most about the enemy when they broke away from their usual actions. What was different about Silverfells? They had a temple with a stone dragon. I backed away from the pyre and looked for the temple, or for where it had been. The Vorsag had ravaged the village for the wood in their pyre, and there weren't many buildings standing. In the end, it could have been any of four sites, but I couldn't tell for certain. But there was nothing that could have been Axial Stone Dragon unless it was smaller than my fist. Who was calling the shots for Vorsag? Cariarn was only a few years older than me. Normally, that would mean that he was either ruled by or at least was guided by his advisors. But I'd met Cariarn. If someone else was pulling the strings, then they were more devious than I was. Possible, but not likely. When Cariarn had been an Estian, he'd had his people scour the countryside for artifacts purported to be magical. What if that was what he was doing now? What if they raided the villages with temples dedicated to Meryn, took the artifacts, and then burned the villages to disguise what they had done? Most of the temples had only junk. But that was not always true. Arnstone, like the other kingdoms, was an old land. There were ruins that yielded unexpected treasures. Some of the temples held powerful magic. I searched the ground carefully, but there was nothing to indicate that a large object had been moved. No wagon tracks, no deep hoof prints, but the Vorsag had been here. More than 50 of them, perhaps 100. Falling rain obscured the tracks. It had been a long time since Axial and Penrod had been here with my father. It was possible that since that time the stone had been moved, but I was convinced it was Cariarn who took it. Just how much power could Cariarn gather that way? I'd been taught that the days of great magic were past with the passing of the Great Empire. The theory was that there was only so much magic in the world, and gradually it had been used up. My father had claimed that there never was an age of great magic, just great storytellers. But what if the magic was stored in thousands of artifacts? What if one person collected all of them and found a way to get the magic out? I had to find Aurig. I started back but stopped when I neared the stacked bodies. If the Vorsag had tried to burn them, it was not out of respect for their enemies. It was to hide something the villagers' bodies might tell. There were 72 men, women, and children laid out singly on the woodpile. Most of them were naked, face down, and blindfolded with strips of rags, probably from their own clothing, and bound hand and foot. Those that weren't bound looked as though they'd died in the fighting when the Vorsag had first attacked.
and there were no flies. The one blessing the rain brought. I was born and bred to prevent things like this. Being Hurog Meaton was more than owning land. It was taking care of the people who lived there. Responsibility was bred in my bones, and the High King's failure to protect these people enraged me. If this land had a lord to oversee it properly, no Vorsagian troop as large as this one would have come here and had the time to do this. But the rightful lord of this land had died in the rebellion, and King Jacobin had not seen fit to replace him, leaving Silver Fells unprotected. I turned over the body of a young girl. Her face was smudged with the dirt of childhood, broken with clean trails of tears that the rain began to wash away. Her body was cool to the touch. The only wound I could find was a slit as wide as two of my fingers in her throat. There were runes drawn on her torso. Some of them were done with paint and started to run as soon as the rain touched them, but others had been cut into her skin. 72 Orinstonians, I thought, glancing at the rest of the bodies. This must have taken a very long time. I inspected the skin under the bindings at her wrists and ankles to see what they had to tell me. Her wrists were raw, but the bindings on her ankles had cut almost to the bone. That, and the lack of pooling blood where she had been lying, told me she had been hung by her feet so the blood would drain from her neck more completely, just like a hog at slaughtering time. It was the analogy that tore the cap off my rage. Deep within me, my anger fanned a fire that had smoldered since Athervon had awakened at Minogue. It poured through my chest, down my arms, and out my hands. I couldn't see the magic I felt thundering in my veins, but the wet wood and thatch lit when I touched them. Pansy snorted and backed as far from the burning, smoking mess as he could without pulling on the reins as the fire traveled rapidly through the wet fuel, releasing the spirits of the dead for their journey beyond. Son of my father, I'd never sworn fealty to a god nor taken much interest in religion. I knew little of Meryn and less of the war god Vekka. And after what Athervon had done to Ciara, I would not give these people to him. They needed justice. A prayer my nurse had sung to me when I was a child came naturally to my tongue, a Shavig prayer that was out of place in these wetlands, but I closed my eyes and sang to Sifrin, god of justice and balance, as the flames roared higher. And he came. I didn't see him even when I opened my eyes, but I felt him. I felt his anger at the village's death. Felt him gather their frightened spirits to his bosom, felt his touch on my forehead as he left. When I finished my song, I felt peaceful, even empty. And in that emptiness came clarity and honesty. The reason for my foul mood these past few days wasn't the rain. It was the growing knowledge that Hurog was lost to me. Even if I won glory defending Orinstone, which was unlikely, even under better circumstances, the king cared nothing for this kingdom. Witness how he failed to protect these villagers. My uncle would care for Hurog better than my father ever had and his sons after him. But for the first time, I had an attainable goal. I would help these people who had no one else to help them.
Lord Wardwick!
Axiel's voice sounded breathless, and when I turned to look at him, he was on his knees with his head bowed. His posture alarmed me, so I reached down and tugged him to his feet.
I thought I ordered you all to wait.
Hope and wonder lit his face when he looked at me. We waited for a quarter mark, but we heard nothing. Since I can take care of myself a bit better than Penrod and the youngsters, I came ahead while the others still argued about what to do. I imagine they'll be along soon. He drew a breath. When I came through the trees, my lord, I smelled evil as I haven't known for centuries, blood magic. Then I heard you sing Sifrin all the way from the Northlands for these people. He cleaned his veil of evil for you, my lord. My father told me that our hope was in Hurog. I did not know until now he dreamed true. I squirmed under his regard. Truthfully, I didn't know what I'd done to invoke it. Lighting the pyre was something Bastia or Orog could have done with half the effort, and had he said centuries? Centuries, I squawked. He grinned sheepishly and rocked back on his heels. The awe was gone from his expression, but it had left his face altered in its wake. The watchful caution that was the usual aspect of his countenance had given way to a silly grin that was out of place in the presence of so much death. "Yes, well," he said, "my father's people tend to live a bit longer than humankind. I was sent to Hurog half a century ago to find hope for my people. The salvation of dwarvenkind."
"Salvation of dwarvenkind?" I wanted to ask.
Instead, I said, "You don't look like a dwarf."
"I take after my mother. My father is so tall."
He raised a hand to his shoulder.
"And twice my weight."
White, steamy smoke and the smell of burning flesh billowed off the wet tinder. The smell reminded me of the mystery of what had happened here at Silver Fells. I grasped onto it hard. A task to fill the emptiness Hurog's loss had left me with. I asked, "Do you remember how big the stone dragon was?"
"A bit larger than Pansy," he said after a moment. "It didn't look like the dragon in the Hurog coat of arms, but it didn't look like much of anything else either. Just more like a piece of stone a good mason had started working into shape, but there weren't any chisel marks."
"Well, it's not here," I said. "Or at least I couldn't find it. I also couldn't find any sign of it being moved." Axiel coughed and moved away from the fire.
"That's odd, I suppose. Someone could have moved it since we were here."
"I don't know a lot about magic," I said, focusing on the burning bodies. "What if I told you that most of the villagers were bled dry like slaughtered sheep, and I couldn't find any great dark places in the dirt where so much blood had flowed?" Axiel frowned. "I'd say that it was blood magic I smelled earlier. It would take a powerful one to consume this much blood. The king's best mage is no more powerful than Bastia. Of all the human wizards I've seen lately, only Orig could work the kind of magic that would require so much blood."
Axiel thought Bastia as powerful as the High King's mages. I knew she was better than she claimed, but I couldn't recall seeing her do anything spectacular. I opened my mouth to ask, but Pansy tossed his head and called out a greeting as the rest of our party emerged from the trees. Orig stopped his horse near me but didn't dismount.
"Impressive," he said, looking at the fire. "You build this yourself?"
"No," I said. "The Vorsag." "Orig, Bastia," I said as the others crowded around. "The dragonstone is gone. Axiel says it was as big as Pansy, but I could find no sign of anyone dragging it off. The villagers were hung and bled out, their bodies covered with arcane runes."
I should have waited to light the pyre, but I had been feeling more than thinking.
Orig tilted his head, staring at the pyre with dreamy eyes as an odd half-smile tugged the corners of his mouth.
"I smell dragons," he said.
Axiel said he thought there was blood magic involved.
"There is a taint to blood magic," replied Bastia, "and I don't feel it here."
I didn't feel up to explaining about Sifirin. Weariness from working magic and from the knowledge that the hole in my spirit where Hurog belonged was permanent made me want to keep it as simple as I could. Could a mage or a group of mages drain an object of magic and use it for themselves?
"Yes," said Orig at the same moment Bastia said no.
I raised my eyebrows at them, and Bastia finally shrugged.
"I suppose it's possible, theoretically. But the stone would still exist, just not magic."
"Not this stone," disagreed Orig, still in that strange, dreamy state.
"I smell dragon."
"Could they have transformed the stone?" asked Penrod.
"That stone felt like dragon magic," said Axiel. "Could something have transformed a dragon into stone, and then the Vorsag released it?"
A cold chill ran down the back of my neck just before the steady drizzle of rain turned to a torrential downpour.
"Cariarn has a dragon?" asked Tostin.
"Someone has a dragon," said Orig peacefully.
Part of me was chanting euphorically.
"I knew there were still dragons. I knew it. I knew it."
While the rest of me tried to figure out what Cariarn would do if he controlled a dragon.
"Where do we go from here?" asked Bastia. "Good question." I put the thought of the dragon aside for the moment. That done, the question was fairly simple to ask. I only needed one more bit of information to test out my theory about the Vorsagian attacks, and I knew where to get it.
"Axiel," I asked, "do you know how to get to Kallus from here?"
"Kallus? Yes, I think so.
Why Kallus?"
"Because I need information. And if anyone has information on what's been going on here, it's that old fox Havernus.
Last I heard, he rules at Kallus still. Havernus's people would know if the other villages the Vorsag hit had held better artifacts than the ones that had been passed by. They would know where other likely targets would be. My father had said that Havernus knew more about what the king's troops had been doing than the king had, for all the old fox tramped about court looking as though butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. The pouring rain eased a bit after an hour or more. For lack of a better place, we set up camp in a relatively sheltered spot under some trees. The fire smoked and sputtered, but it was good enough to cook over. It was my turn to do the cooking. Oreg had gone hunting and produced a pair of rabbits. I had them spitted and turning over the fire when Ciara came to sit beside me and took one of the spits, more because she wanted decent food to eat than out of any desire to help me. "So, you're not avoiding me anymore, huh?" She grinned at me and tapped my face. "Me, grumpy?" When she raised her eyebrows, I said, "It rains all the time here, and we've been running around not accomplishing much for the better part of the summer." She shook her head at me and pointed to the sky, then to my face. "I know it's still raining," I said, "but now I know what we need to do." It was true. Cariarn had a dragon, and possibly more magic than the world had seen in an age. An entire village had been slaughtered, Hurog was lost, but I felt better because I knew what I was going to do. "You're turning the rabbit too fast." She leaned against my shoulder but didn't noticeably slow the spit. Her rabbit was perfect. Mine was too pink in the middle. Not that it mattered, as hungry as we were. We all went gathering wood after dinner except for Ciara, who, armed with a hunting horn to call us, stayed with the horses. Usually we all traveled separately, but this time Oreg came trotting by my side. He was quiet for a bit, but I could tell from the bounce in his step that he was just biding his time. "So, you decided to be a hero again," he said finally. I couldn't decide if there was a sarcasm in his voice or not. "Orinstone needs a hero," I said, kicking a stone out of the path with a little more force than necessary. "Are you going to free the dragon?" "Oreg, gods, there are 7 of us. What do you think we can do?" And there, I thought, was the problem with my scheme to help the Orinstonian villagers. I wasn't the legendary warrior like my father. I wasn't Selig. I had no army. It was like the story about the fly who declared war on the horse who took no notice. "He can't be allowed to keep her," he said with sudden heat. "There were no flame marks where the dragon fought. They must have it under a spell." A spell? My mind boggled at the thought of how much power it would take to control a dragon. "Could you break a spell strong enough to hold a dragon?" I asked. His silence answered me. At last he said, "What are you going to do?" "I'm going to Kallus. From there, I'll send a message to the king, my uncle, and Havernus, so something is done to stop Cariarn, if anything can stop him now."
"They'll try to kill it, Ward," Oreg said in a low tone. He meant the dragon. "They can't afford to let him use a dragon."
"And just tell me what else they can do," I said, knowing he was right. We walked a few more paces. Oreg's face turned away from me.
"Selig didn't need an army to kill a dragon."
I came to a full stop. "What do you mean?"
"If one Hurogmeaton killed a dragon, why shouldn't you?"
I scarcely noticed the sarcasm as a cold knot settled in my stomach. "Selig chained the dragon?
My hero killed the dragon in the cave?"
"Protect those weaker than yourself," he'd written. "Be kind when the opportunity is given." Ideas that no one else in my father's home would have said out loud for fear of being laughed at. Selig set forth the ideals I'd tried to follow, but it was impossible to disbelieve Oreg's truth.
"And killed her so he'd have the power to defeat the invading fleet. He was scared, frightened he'd lose Hurog."
There was something wrong with Oreg's voice, but I didn't pay attention to it.
It hurt to breathe. If Selig killed the dragon, he'd also had Oreg beaten for protesting it.
I'd seen the beating myself in the Great Hall the day Garanon had come to Hurog. How could I feel betrayed by a man dead for centuries?
"Oreg," I stopped when I saw his eyes glowing with an uncanny lavender light. Despite the ring I wore and the disparity in our sizes, I backed away. "Did killing the dragon make your life easier?" he whispered to me. "Do you hear her scream every night like I do?" Auric, I haven't killed any dragons. Chills crept up my back and I stepped another pace away. He laughed like the autumn wind in a field of corn.
I warned you what would happen. Your children's children's children will pay the price for what you have done.
Auric's episodes weren't insanity. Warrior's dreams, Stala called them. Battle visions. Sudden visions of past battle so strong that they overwhelmed the present, terrifying when they hit an armed man, but doubly so when that man was also a wizard. A wizard of Auric's power made the dream real enough to bleed.
Auric, I said. It wasn't me.
A soldier in his lifetime could amass a lot of horror and shame. How much more numerous were the memories Auric had? He told me once that he tried not to remember things. Auric stared at me, breathing heavily as he fought the vision off.
It's done with Auric, I said. The dragon died a long time ago. Ward?
Yes. The terror in his eyes hurt me. Was he afraid of his memories? Or was he afraid of me? I turned away and began walking. We need to hunt for wood. After a moment, I heard his footsteps following me.
Sorry, he said. You look like him, you know. He was a big man, too, and filled with magic, like you've been since Minogue.
I shrugged. We gathered wood for a bit. There wasn't much to be had that hadn't rotted in the damp. The woods looked as if they'd been gleaned already. We were too near Silverfells.
After I killed that boy on the Ornstone border, I pretended to be my father, I said abruptly. He was good at killing. I needed to talk to someone. Bastia was a better listener, but Auric had known my father.
Not like your father, Auric said as if convincing himself. You've never been like him.
I thought about the swift easing of my knife into the boy's neck. The way I couldn't lend words of comfort to my brother when he mourned the loss of his innocence. And I knew Auric was wrong.
When my father died, do you know why I really didn't want to drop my role as an idiot? I asked.
No. His reply was too easy. He'd increased the distance between us oh so casually, reacting to my body language, I thought, and I tried to loosen up. At the time, I thought it was mostly embarrassment, but that wasn't it entirely. You see, I've played an idiot so long, there wasn't anyone else to be. When I left Hurog, I tried being that mercenary, but it wasn't right. So I picked Selic.
He was quiet for a long time. I didn't look back for him, just paced forward away from camp. We'd been talking too much to find any game, but given any luck, Tostin or Axial would bring something back.
You do Selic very well for a man who didn't know him. His voice was tentative. He wasn't all bad. Not until he grew old and frightened.
The gap between us closed.
He wasn't as smart as you are, nor as kind. Just be yourself, Ward.
We marched through the muck, side by side now.
There isn't any me, Auric, I thought. Just bits of my father, a stupid mercenary who charmed everyone he met except my aunt and an ancestor who left too many journals for me to read.
Auric grinned at me suddenly, shaking off the gloomy mood.
I know you. You talk slow and fight hard. You're smart and kind to small children, abused horses and slaves. You are the Hurogmeeton. That's more than most people know about themselves.
I smiled at him. A grateful smile, as I'm sure Selic would have had. The idiot talked slow. My father fought hard. Selic was smart, arrogant and kind, and Hurog wasn't mine. I was so good at playing roles I'd even fooled Auric. I would just have to make sure I didn't start fooling myself. I'd intended to share the watch with Auric, but after our talk in the woods, I'd changed my mind. I'd said too much, and it had left me raw. I gave him first watch with Penrod, which left me with Penrod's usual partner, Bastia, for second watch. A rise in the ground, not far from camp, allowed a fair view of the trail from both east and west. After Auric and Penrod retired to their bedrolls next to Ciara and Tostin, Bastia and I settled on a boulder large enough for the both of us.
You came back from the village as if it gave you new direction.
She shifted uncomfortably on the hard surface. Knowing your enemy and understanding your allies is the best way to win a war, according to my aunt. I gave her a wry look. Not that we have any chance of winning a war against Vorsag, mind you, but I've an idea of what they may be after.
She laughed and took a bit of bread and cheese out of a small pack she'd brought and handed it to me. Eat this. Axiel gave it to me for you. He said if it didn't get eaten tonight, no one could eat it, and you've been eating less as the supplies get lower. You've started to lose weight again. I nibbled the stale bread with all the enthusiasm it deserved. How could something be dry and moldy at the same time?
So, you think the Vorsag are after artifacts?
She laughed at my expression. You asked me if a mage could harvest magic from artifacts.
I put down the food without much regret. I hope Havernus's people will be able to tell me for certain.
It'll be good to do something else besides slogging through marshes, she said wryly. I prefer fighting.
I laughed softly. Me too. That was my father and me. She touched the corner of my lips with a finger. She hadn't been flirting, so I was unprepared for her touch.
I keep expecting you to be stupid, do you know? She traced a line from my mouth to the corner of my eye.
My breathing grew ragged despite the effort I expended to steady it. It's the eyes. Hard to look smart with cow eyes. And I talk too slowly, I said.
The feather-light touch of her fingers on my face caused my belly to tighten. It wasn't the first time she'd indicated she would be willing to sleep with me. It was one of the reasons I'd always paired myself with Ciara or one of the men. Penrod and Axiel might be able to couple without commitment, but I'd never gotten the knack of it. I would have thought listening to you would make me impatient, she breathed. But your voice is like a velvet drum. I always feel so safe with you. She held my head with both of her hands while she came up to her knees to kiss me.
She desired me for my body. Women had liked it even when they had thought it belonged to an idiot. Maybe especially when they thought it belonged to an idiot. But she liked me, too. That would make it more than sex, a gift between friends. Or at least she liked the man she thought I was. Strong, competent, honorable, smart.
The echoes of my earlier conversation with Oreg kept me from falling into her spell. As I drank in the smooth wine flavor of her mouth, I fought for the strength to pretend for a few hours more. One of the things the game with my father had taught me was that half of the success of the disguise was in the mind of others. My father thought I was stupid, so he ignored signs that I might be something else. Bastia thought me a hero. The role should have been easy, but it wasn't. I pulled away reluctantly.
Wart?
Breathing hard, I rested my forehead on hers, trying to find a reason for my restraint that wouldn't hurt her or me. It was easier knowing I was more recreation for her than serious prey. The Av and Hellish were freer about such things than we Shavikmen.
We can't do this, Bastia. We're on watch. If we get any further, I won't care if 100 Vorsagian raiders come galloping down that road.
It helped that the excuse was true. She snickered and allowed me to break the mood.
100, eh?
I nibbled down her neck once, regretfully. Then I bounced to my feet and took several steps back.
Maybe 1,000. I'm going to run the perimeter. I pointed at her. You stay here.
She was still smiling when I left, but I knew that I had just put off a problem I'd need to deal with later. Kallus looked different from Hurog as possible, given that they both were fortified keeps. Hurog was square where Kallus was round. Kallus was perhaps 3 times as large and built out of native stone. The gray-green lichen covering the walls turned the orange stone to a muddy brown. The gates were closed and barred. Persuading the young warrior in charge of the gate to let me inside proved to be significantly more difficult than finding Kallus had been. His lord wasn't there, which I knew. We looked like mildewed bandits, which I also knew. Far worse, we looked like Shavik bandits. We'd grow old and rot before he'd let us in, he informed us with a few pithy adjectives, judging by the grins from his fellows who'd gathered around as soon as they'd noticed something interesting was happening at the gate. They'd be pleased to help us along. Well, he wouldn't be left on guard for more than half the day. I'd wait and see how the man who replaced him on wall was before I tried any more desperate measures. We'd picked a few apples from an orchard not far down the road, and Axiel handed me one. It was green and sour, but
better than stale bread and moldy cheese.
"Where'd that apple come from?"
called the guardian of the gate suspiciously.
"Bought it from a man down the road."
I took another bite and smiled around the sourness.
"No Orinstonian would sell our good apples to a Northlander."
"Well," I stared at the apple a bit,
"I'd not call it good, but he said it was the best Orinstone had."
The snappy retort lost a little because of the distance the wall put between us, but I saw from his grin he was ready to give as good as he got. The guard was bored, and so was I. Neither he nor I really wanted a confrontation, just a few minutes of stupid northerner-southerner, all done in good cheer. Unfortunately, one of his fellows, a young newcomer to the conversation, didn't understand the game.
"That apple's too good for shavig scum like you."
The hothead had a crossbow, and he knocked it. My aunt always said you had to watch out for the young ones, as they're generally too stupid to understand what's really going on. It had always amused me when she told me that. I caught a glimpse of the gate guard's horrified face and knew that he'd be almost as unhappy if the young man shot me as I would. The walls at Callis weren't as high as Hurog, maybe only 25 feet. Luckily, I was faster with my apple than the guard was with his crossbow. He mustn't have had a good grip, but the apple would just have spoiled his aim rather than knock the bow out of his hand. His weapon fell only a few feet from me. The gate guard, as senior on the wall, turned on the rash and bowless guard. I couldn't hear what he said, but the boy wilted.
"What's going on here?"
The voice rang clear as a bell, though I couldn't see the man who spoke. Judging by the sudden attention of everyone on the wall, it was someone very senior. I picked up the bow, disarmed it, and tossed it up over the edge of the wall. I was hoping it would land at their feet just when the senior man approached them. Maximum embarrassment for them, possible entrance for me, as I had stopped the boy without hurting anyone and returned their weapon. After a few moments, a new face appeared at the wall. His head was shaved from the top of his ears to the nape of his neck in Orinstonian traditional style, but he'd allowed his beard to grow out white and full like a Shavikman. It was a distinctive style and made him easy to recognize. Havernus's right-hand man, I thought in surprise. I didn't know his name. I don't think I'd ever heard him say more than 4 words together. He was always at Havernus's side, and so should have been at Estion. Havernus was only allowed at Callis for a fortnight at planting and a fortnight at harvest, which was still a month or more away this far south. He frowned at me.
"Who are you, son, and what do you want?"
He asked it in Talvanish, so I replied in the same language.
"Ward of Hurog, I have some news about the Vorsag. Wait here."
He scattered the guards back to their posts and then left. Orig handed me another apple.
"So, are we in?"
I took a bite. "I think so." If the old fox's shadow had been here alone, he'd have had the authority to open the gate at once or send us on our way. That he'd left the wall implied he was going to speak to his superior, Havernus. Havernus had always been kind to me. Of course, he might not feel the same way when he found out I wasn't an idiot. I wondered what he was doing here. Had King Jakovin finally decided the raiders were a threat? The gate rattled and began rising slowly. "Mount up," I called, following my own advice. We rode through the narrow passage into the bailey proper. Most of the expanse between the walls and their inner keep was cobbled. I suppose they'd have to because of the rain. Spring at Hurog left our bailey half a foot deep in muck. Here it would have been year-round. Straw had been piled along the edges of the bailey, and tents were set up all along the walls. A quick glance led me to estimate that Callis had at least 200 more men than she'd been billed to. Had the king allowed Havernus to come home and defend his land? I couldn't believe that the old fox would break his word and return without the king's permission. We were met halfway to the keep by Havernus himself and a few servants.
"Ward," he said, "what are you doing here, boy?"
I started to give him my stupid cow look out of habit, but restrained myself. It would be a deadly mistake to let Havernus think I was stupid now. His dislike of lies and broken promises was the stuff of legends.
"Same as you, I imagine," I said, "fighting the Vorsag."
The warm smile left his face at my crisp reply. I dismounted, loosened Pansy's girth, and continued talking to give him time to think. "I think the Vorsag are raiding, rather than conquering right now, though. Cariarn has always lusted after magic.
I've just come from Silverfells, and the raiders had left there not a half day before us, killing everyone in the village. My men tell me that the last time they were there, 15 years ago, Marin's temple at Silverfells claimed a large stone dragon, which is not there anymore.
Arnstone seems to have had a beneficial effect on your intellect, he said.
I gave him a slow grin. We'll have to recommend it. I could see from his face it wasn't enough, so I continued more soberly. My father killed his father to get Hurog, and he half-killed me. I was afraid he'd finish the job. Shock came and went quickly on his face. Slowly, he nodded his head. He knew my father.
Survive how you can, he said. Would you introduce me? I see several Hurog faces, but I can't place them.
Havernus, I said formally. Ornstonians dislike titles, so I gave him none.
These are my men, Axiel and Penrod, who fought under my father's banner and now follow me.
Normally, one wouldn't introduce one's troop to a man of Havernus's standing, but he'd all but ordered me to do so.
And my sister, Ciara.
She gave him a gaming smile in return for his courtly bow.
You're supposed to curtsy, you mannerless ruffian.
She rolled her eyes at me, then bobbed quickly up and down like a serving maid, and Havernus chuckled.
My brother, Tostin.
Havernus's gaze sharpened on my brother.
I thought he was dead.
Who said that? I asked. I hadn't heard that bit of gossip.
Your father, I believe.
Pleased to meet you, sir, said Tostin, bowing. My father was mistaken.
Bastia of Avenhel,
I continued the introductions, mage and warrior. Bastia smiled and sank into a graceful curtsy that managed to look ladylike despite her moldering fighting leathers.
And our second mage, Orig, my cousin or some such, who tells me it is possible that Carrion plans on draining the magic from his artifacts to perform great magic. Also, that Carrion's mages have managed to transform whatever was in the stone dragon into something real. He thinks it was a dragon.
Ward?
The voice was familiar, but it was so out of place I couldn't attribute it until I saw one of my cousins hurrying over to us. I could usually tell them apart, but in some strange way this man looked like neither of them. He'd lost weight, and he looked as if he hadn't slept in weeks, nor smiled in all that time.
As I live and breathe, he said, sounding as astounded as I felt.
What was my cousin, whichever one it was, doing here?
It is you. Where did you come from?
There were no bright scarves tied in odd places, but it was the neatness of his appearance that finally made me guess.
Bekram? What are you doing here?
He clapped me on the shoulder and ignored my question.
Father will be glad to know.
His jaw dropped.
Tostin!
Good to see you again, Bekram, he answered.
I'll leave you to your greetings, Havernus nodded at us. Bekram, see that they are settled in.
Chapter 11, Wardwick. I wasn't entirely sure whether I'd gotten myself into a war to defend Arnstone from the Vorsag, or a war against the High King. Either way, it suited me. The Blue Guard was camped along a soft stretch of turf against one wall. I whistled when I counted the tents, which included Stala's distinctive one. Three Blue Guardsmen were walking a lazy patrol around the perimeter. The rest were probably out practicing somewhere, knowing my aunt.
What are you doing all the way out here with Stala and half the Blue Guard, Bekram? Tostin asked my question, which seemed wise given how Bekram felt about me. Did the king decide there was a war going on at last? Bekram snorted.
The king misspoke himself and fell into his half-brother's trap.
Alazan, I said.
None other.
The upshot is that Havernus was given leave to bring 100 men to quell the problems here in Arnstone.
And he chose the Blue Guard, I said doubtfully.
Bekram stopped walking toward the tents.
No, that's another story.
Ward, what happened to you?
He sounded concerned. I fought back the impulse to list my nicks and bruises, old habits die hard.
My father died, I said.